This programme was made with the support of Sound and Vision, Broadcasting Funding Scheme, a BCI initiative.
Raised on songs and stories.
You're all very welcome to Raised on Songs and Stories here on Near 90 FM. My name is Gerry Cooley, and for the next half an hour or so, we're going to be travelling the highways and byways of both Dublin City and County, meeting all sorts of people talking about all sorts of things. Songs, poems and stories, all about the good old days. And you never know, if you listen, you might hear somebody that you know. So get the kettle on, make yourself a cup of tea, put the feet up and sit back and enjoy yourself.
In the rare old times, ring a ring a roll.
My very first guest today is a man called Paul Duff, and his family are known the length and breadth of North County Dublin. At one stage, they had five farms covering over 1,000 acres, stretching from Santry Ballymun on out past the airport out on to Swords. Sadly, most of that land is all gone today, and Paul's homestead was in Clonmel House, which was just close to Ballymun. If you know where the Autobahn pub is, directly across the road from that would have been where Clonmel House stood, and that's where Paul grew up as a young boy working on his father's farm. And Paul talks to me a little bit about working on that farm way back then.
When we were in Ballymun, you were out in the fields, you could hear all the different bells from around Dublin. You could hear the ships coming in, your ship's horns and the various bells. We could recognise the bells coming from Fingers, bells coming from various parts of Dublin, especially when the wind was blowing in the right direction. Boats used to dock at the north wall then, and we'd hear the ship's horns, the boat's horn as it was coming in docking. We didn't have too many watches in those days or clocks. You'd be out in the fields and be wondering would it be nearly time to go home, and we'd be watching out for these.
Your older brother's Gerard, and who was your older brother?
Some was John, and then there was Desmond and Joe and Malachy and myself. And
You're the youngest, aren't you?
I'm the youngest.
You're the baby of the family.
Yeah, I'm the baby of the family.
Were you spoiled by your father?
Not by my father, by my mother a little bit.
Everything was for Paul.
Well, in a family like that, you wouldn't get away with that, you know. Yeah. There were times in those days, you know, there wasn't much money floating about. Farmers weren't subsidised. Yeah. There was no handouts. You know. I remember sad times, you know, my father sending a load of cabbage to the market and he'd bring it home and dump it. He couldn't even sell it for half a crown.
Oh, right.
Oh yeah.
That's bringing it to the likes of Lightfoot.
Bringing it into the market, Lightfoot in those places, and you couldn't sell it. And other produce you bring in, you'd be bringing hay in, because strangely enough, in those days there were dairy farmers in the middle of the town. You know? I went to school in Glasnevin, and the Christian Brothers in Glasnevin, and when they heard you came from Clonmel House, the Christian Brothers and teachers were mostly from the country, you know, and they say, oh well, you obviously got Tipperary associations. You said, no I haven't, no we're seen as a bit of a culture from Ballymun, you know.
And that was Paul Duff, and what a gentleman he is. And he's been very helpful to me, giving me photographs and information about the Duff farms, because I'm writing a local history book about the area, and his help has been invaluable. So thanks very much for that, Paul. We're going to move swiftly along now. We're going to have a song from a woman called Peggy Buckley. She's Maureen Buckley's younger sister, and she used to front a small little band called the Shamrock Cayley Band. And here's a little song from Peg.
Can't help loving that man of mine.
I haven't seen that.
That'd make your night now. Fish gotta swim, birds gotta fly. I gotta love one man till I die. Can't help
she hates me.
Loving that man of mine. Tell me he's lazy, tell me he's slow. Tell me I'm crazy, maybe I know, but I can't help loving that man of mine. When he goes away, that's my rainy day. But when he comes back, that day is fine. The sun will shine. He can come home as late as can be.
Liar.
Home without him ain't no home to me. Can't help loving that man of mine. That lovely.
That's lovely. Very nice.
Very nice. We all the gang, whenever she sings it, we all come there. He can come home with late to eat, and we all shout, liar,
liar.
And that was Short and Sweet by Peg Landrigan, as she's known now, formerly Peg Buckley. And the girls, Joan O'Toole, Joan Martin, are there. Maureen, the sister, is there, giving a dig out on the vocals. And this was a great tradition for the girls to meet up in one of the girls' house every week. Another part of the crew was a woman called Margaret Lawler, always known as Golly Lawler to Maureen. Next man I talked to was a man called Bernard Bourne from a place called Puckstown Lane, long since vanished and now called Collins' Avenue. There are some small cottages still there up on the corner of Grace Park Road, so there are some remnants. But Bernard was born and reared there. In old age, he actually used to hang around with my grandfather, Jack Boland, and they would meet in Doran's in town. This is during the 70s and the 80s, and they'd have a few pints together. So I caught up with Bernard one day, and he told me a story about him and my grandfather, Jack, buying a pair of long johns. He described it as things that got on his wick. When you bought something, you never really got what you bought. And he describes the Long John story. And then he also goes on to have a go at the famous non-stick frying pans that actually stick.
There was one day they arrived in, and he was only giving me the price of two pair of Long Johns. And Jake told me that I'd get them cheaper up in another place. No, I didn't. I said, no, she'll know. I had to get the woolen ones. But I'll just show you how you can be billed. Now, £16 was an awful lot of money. That'd be £8 each. But Jake told me in another shop that you get them for a couple, that I'd say they'd be cotton. Now, I got the Long Johns. Yeah, I used to wear them in the winter. Your man took the two pair there with the same drawer and goinies. And the more one was washed, the shorter it got. And the more the other ones washed, the longer they got. So you can be billed no matter what you do. Get the bill again, matter what you do. Please. I've two pans there. I've two more out in the shed in the bag. I've another one in there.
Five pans.
And they all stick. The rationale stick to the whole lot of them. They don't know what to shite. And to tell you, you're looking at advertisements that have pans there when they don't stick. So the people that sold them knew the stuck. That right? You have to be over here quick, put plenty of grease on it.
They're out to get you.
That's right, but another thing, I've seen things.
And what a great voice Bernard has. For the couple of hours that I was up doing that interview, he had me in absolute stitches. He had such a great take on very normal things. He twisted them around and he had a great insight into very, very ordinary things and made them funny. The next man we're going to listen to is a man called Gerald M. Smith. He's a very good friend of mine, and what's special about Jerry is his voice. I travel the length and breadth of the country in this man's company, and wherever we are, if there's a song called for, when Jerry stands up and sings this song, he brings the house down, and after you hear it, you're going to understand why.
Oh, Danny boy, the pipes are calling. From glen to glen and down the mountainside. The summer's gone and all the flowers are dying. 'Tis you, yes you, must go and I must bide. But come ye back when summer's in the meadow, or when the valley's hushed and white with snow. Yes, I'll be here in sunshine or in shadow. Oh, Danny boy, oh, Danny boy, I love you so. And when you come and all the flowers are dying, and I am dead as dead I well may be, you'll come and find the place where I am lying. And kneel and say an Ave there for me. And I shall hear, though soft you tread above me, and on my grave shall warm and sweeter be. And you will kneel and tell me that you love me. And I shall sleep in peace until you come to me.
And that was the beautiful voice of Gerald M. Smith, another good dub with a voice. And that one was recorded in the backseat of my car. I left it so late to get this recording that I needed it done in a hurry. So I went up, he's on his break, we jump into the back of the seat and we sing it. And what a good result we had. No mixing, no studio. It just goes to show you, quality will always show out in the end. And speaking of quality Dublin voices, the next one up is a lady called Sandra Clunan. She's a member of St. Papin's Choir, Cor Naive Papin, and she sings a song Oscailge called An Cosheire.
The glush on baclock bog toast, the lock is put in here as the lecordige. A geary lanad on koshera, cani the corin a store ha. Yok the waller tree vow her turk is put in here as the lecordige. Da hit on conic on toner a leak, issue the quid lana lefona. Sun died diddly died dum, sun died diddly died dum. Sun died diddly died dum, sun diddly diddly dero. The wool of us a good joe, rocked over stirred thumb crack a good joe le shin. Nor a vee on conic on toin again, scum brain so while you come floor hawk. The fool of us a go cried on shin, the stirt on crack a go brock le shin. Court in ash the ra toy manish, gone clue, gone anum, gone o'er hawk. Send I did diddly diddy dum, send I did diddly diddy dum. Send I did diddly diddy dum, send diddly diddly dero.
And yes, that was the beautiful sound of Sandra Clunan, formerly Sandra Hutchinson, one of the leading voices of St. Papin's Choir, Cor Naive Papin. Staying in the north side of Dublin, we talked to a man called Tony O'Reilly. He spent the first 14 years of his life in Griffith Avenue, and then he moved out to the country. He moved out to Santry and spent a further 11 years there before he got married and went on his merry way. I spoke to him about his time in Santry. He remembered running up and down Coolock Lane training for his rugby career. As a matter of fact, he was capped for Ireland for the very first time while he was living in Santry on Coolock Lane. And he remembered going over to Santry Stadium, and he remembered a man called Billy Morton, and he had a few memories about Billy.
The Billy Morton Stadium. I always remember Billy Morton. He's such a wonderful, mad character. Yeah. And I can remember the night when five guys beat the 4-minute mile at Santry. Right, yeah. And Billy has explained to the world's press who are surrounding them. They said, God, Mr. Morton, how can you explain this extraordinary event? Five men tonight have beaten this, and Landy and Ronnie Delaney and all these Albie Thomas and Murray Halberg. Yeah. How do you? I said, I'll tell you. Yeah, it's very simple. He said, it's the trias. The trias, he said, around Santry, he said, are very unusual. They do breed out oxygen. Most trees, he said, breed out carbon dioxide. The trias in Santry, he said, breed out oxygen. And he says, the runners, therefore, he said, are enormously enriched in their speed. That's the reason for it. I said, you could be described writing this down, you know, unusual events in Dublin.
Yeah.
Lee Morton was, he was to die for. He was a wonderful promoter, and he was the great impresario. In period 47, 48, 49, 50, athletics in this country was fantastically popular. He used to have these meetings at College Park with John Joe Berry and Jimmy Reardon and Paul Dolan, and just a marvelous panoply of Irish greats. I mean, John Joe Berry would have been the first man to break the four-minute mile. He was called the Ballinacurry Hare, and he used to always run looking behind him as though the police were after him. It was very funny. And these are the guys. The basis of this was that he created a certain amount of money, which of course led to the building of Sanford Stadium. Billy Morton, to me, remains the ultimate impresario. The truth had only a partial importance to him. I mean, what was terribly important was to create a great aura of importance about Sanchi.
Yeah,
Billy Morton.
And that was Tony's memories of the great Billy Morton. We went on to speak a little bit about Tony's rugby career. He was capped for Ireland at the age of 18 when he was living in Coolachlane in Auburn. And incidentally, the house was called after him because he had Auburn hair. He was really and truly one of the great sports personalities of the 50s in Ireland. He was really the first of his kind. He was the Brian O'Driscoll, the Dave Beckham of his day. Anyway, at the age of 19, he was capped for the Lions, and he scored a record amount of tries during that Lions tour, which have never been equaled to this day. One of the great stories that Tony tells is his last game for Ireland, where he came back on a bit of a comeback, which was a disaster, and Tony picks up the story.
And the comeback was, I was at that stage managing director of the H.J. Hines Company in the UK.
Yeah.
What I was doing was playing very recreational rugby for London Irish. And I was sort of adequate to not in pretty good condition, but adequate to get on the team. I was then picked by M.R. Steele Bodger, Dean at Cambridge, marked in England centre called Spencer. It was the final trial for the Cambridge team against Oxford for the varsity match. And it went sort of well for me, all the things that, you know, the ball bounces for you, etc.
Yeah, it was one of those games.
And I rather looked better than my physical condition would allow me to be. But anyway, the selectors who were watching that particular match said, well, if there were a problem, your man seems okay. So a day before the international against England, never having played any matches at all in Ireland.
No warm-up, no nothing.
Nothing. I'm at a nightclub giving a dinner for some clients called Annabelle's in London. And the phone rings, and it's Dawson. Most of these selectors were younger than I was, because I'm 36 years of age at this stage. And he says, listen, this fellow Willie Brown looks like he's going to break down. And would you be free to come to the practice session tomorrow? I said, Jesus. That's sort of unprogrammed. I've got a board meeting tomorrow, but maybe I could slip out. So halfway through the board meeting at Hines, at Hayes Park in Middlesex, I said the next day, excuse me for a moment, I just want to slip out. So I get downstairs to Arthur, who's somewhere around the house at the moment. He drove me to the ground, the Honourable Artillery Corps ground, and the press were curious when I arrived, because they thought I was some sort of senior official from the rugby union who was sort of tugging out to sort of wander around the ground. Then suddenly, to their absolute amazement, it was declared that Brown was unfit and O'Reilly was going in after 8 years off the Irish team for this amazing game against England, where I was marking a fellow called Dickinson, who was the English sprint champion. I mean, pretty swift guy.
But did you not know, going? Did you not, like, we must have been thinking this, like, this is...
But I mean, you know...
Devil may care.
Yeah, well, it didn't really matter to me very much at that stage of my life. But so I said, look, okay, I'm well able to look after myself. I mean, Spencer, in fact, was the England centre who I sort of more or less succeeded in beating in the Steel Bodger game. So I was reasonably confident that if this was a close-fought game, I'd be able to heave myself around at, not at high speed, but at a fairly important speed. So anyway, to the amazement of the press, it was then clear that I was in the team for the following day against England. So the team are leaving by a rather nasty little bus and I am leaving in a large Rolls Royce. With Arthur with a big hat on his head with sort of chauffeur written across. So Arthur on the following day, because every paper in England has this amazing, amazing decision by the Irish selectors to select this geriatric on their team, and there's Arthur, complete with the, you know, headgear, opening the door of the car.
Hooray, Henry!
Me getting in, yes. So one of the headlines, and one of them was Heinz means has beans. I remember that particular one. But in every single paper, I mean, there must have been 9 of them. They all had Arthur, the chauffeur, opening the door, and me getting in, the team going with us. So the following day, it's a rather interesting game because Dickinson never gets the ball. So nobody knows how fast he is or how slow I am at this stage. Secondly, if the ball was there, I was there.
Right.
If the ball was there, I was there. I was well able to work out where the ball was going to be, so I was not going to be there. Anyway, the match...
you were hiding from the ball.
Exactly. So at the very end of the game, there was something that you don't see today, an English foot rush. And the English forwards came through, and I threw myself, which I don't normally do, at their feet to kill the ball. And I received, as I say, what centuries of Irishmen have received from passing Englishmen, which is a boot in the back of the head. So I'm knocked unconscious. And as I came through this veil of unconsciousness, and I was held up by 2 ambulance men, I could hear this 80,000 crowd screaming and shouting and roaring. It's amazing what you could hear. I could hear one Dublin guy. And he was shouting at the top of his voice, "And kick his effing chauffeur while you're at it." That was the last sound I heard as I was taken off the field. You know, this is the vox, the vox populi, the people have spoken.
And that was Tony telling us all about his final game for Ireland against England. I believe they lost 12-0 that day. His rugby career was over and it was all a bit of a shambles. But, you know, he had served them well up till then and it didn't really matter to him at that stage, as he said. But it's quite a funny one. Beans means Heinz, I think, is hilarious. And Tony has a good sense of humour about stuff like that. Doesn't take it all too seriously. That interview was done in April 2005, and of Christmas that year, Tony invited me by to his house in Fitzwilliam Square for Christmas cup of tea. And when I seen him there, I had the idea of maybe he could do a poem for me. And I asked him to do The Lake Isle of Innisfree by William Butler Yeats, and Tony kindly obliged.
I will arise and go now, and go to Innisfree, a small cabin built there of clay and wattles made. 9 bean rows will I have there, a hive for the honey bee, and live alone in the bee-loud glade. And I shall have some peace there, for peace comes dropping slow, dropping from the vales of the morning to where the cricket sings. There's midnight all a glimmer, and noon a purple glow, and evening full of the linnet's wings. I will rise and go now, for all was night and day, I hear lake water lapping with low sounds by the shore. While I stand on the roadway, or on the pavement grey, I hear it in the deep heart's core.
And they were the words of William Butler Yeats, beautifully spoken by Tony, I might add. We're going to continue in the William Butler Yeats team, and my next guest is a man called William Cooley. He's my uncle, and he was a contemporary of Tony O'Reilly's in around the Santry Turnipin Lane area. He actually used to play table tennis with him. One of his party pieces is The Lake Isle of Innisfree, the song from the Quiet Man film, if you remember it. So let's hear it from him.
I've met some folk who say that I'm a dreamer, and I've no doubt there's truth in what they say. But sure, a body's bound to be a dreamer when all the things you love are far away. I wandered o'er green hills and mossy valleys to find the peace no other land could hold. To hear the birds make music fit for angels, and watch the rivers laughing as they flow. But dreams don't last, and dreams are not forgotten. And so I'm back to stark reality. And if they made a footways here with gold dust, I'd sooner choose the Isle of Innisfree. And as the moonlight peeps across the rooftops of this fair city, wondrous though it be, I hear its music, music and its laughter. I'm once again back home in Innisfree.
That was the voice of my Uncle William giving us the Lake Isle of Innisfree. And all of this William Butler Yeats stuff has put me in the mood for a little bit of poetry. And one of my favourite poems by William Butler Yeats is called The Clots of Heaven. I once had to recite this in Toner's Pub in Baggot Street as part of my tour guide duties. And the reason I was doing it in Toner's was because William Butler Yeats went there once as a guest of Oliver St. John Gogarty. When he won the Poet Laureate's Prize for Literature, they went there to celebrate. And he went into the Snug in Toner's, legend has it, and ordered a glass of sherry. And once he had downed the sherry, he abruptly left the pub and said, "Don't ever ask me to go to a Dublin pub again." It seems as though it was all a little bit too noisy and raucous for William Butler Yeats. Had I the heavens embroidered cloths, inwrought with gold and silver light, the blue and the dim and the dark clots of night, and light and the half-light, I would spread the clots under your feet, but I, being poor, have only my dreams. I have spread my dreams under your feet. Tread softly, because you tread on my dreams.
Raised on songs and stories, heroes of renown, the passing tales and the glory.
And so we've reached the last show in the present series. We had 6 programs and I hope you enjoyed listening to them, because I thoroughly enjoyed making them. I'd like to thank all of the people who welcomed me into their homes, gave me their time, gave me their songs, and gave me their stories. And who knows, maybe next season we'll have a new series of Raised on Songs and Stories. This is Jerry Cooley from Near 90 FM. Please God, you'll hear from me again.
As the light declines, I'll remember Dublin City in the rare old times.
This programme was made with the support of Sound and Vision, Broadcasting Funding Scheme, a BCI initiative.